Well, hello, and a very warm welcome back to the Andrew Eborn Show with me, Andrew Eborn. Well, who else? I'll tell you who else. It's a time for a pair of briefs, and joining me yet again is the wonderful Stephen Barrett. How are you, Stephen?
Good. Pottering along.
Well, pottering along is good. We quite like pottering along. It's okay. What I love about a pair of briefs, we basically the idea is that we unpack the dark arts behind the law, try and explain it in a concise and easy way. And we've had some great feedback from all of you, the great British and public and people around the world, about topics you want us to unpack, but also saying, look, it helps you understand what's behind the headlines, what it all means, why judges are making decisions they make. Cutting through the jargon in an easy to understand way. And we wanted to look at, people have often spoken about Tom Bingham, who was a former British judge and law lord, and he outlined eight principles of the rule of law in his book, appropriately called The Rule of Law. And I thought we should have a look at some of these because they come up all of the time. And the first one, let me just deal with this then, is clarity and accessibility. The law must be accessible and, so far as possible, clear and predictable. Stephen.
I have a really difficult relationship with Tom Bingham. I should make it very clear to listeners and viewers. By the way, I've now got a, I don't know if you're as much of a stats nerd as I am, but both on Twitter and on Substack, I've got a substantial foreign audience and largely American, although Spanish too. But large, the big one is Americans. So we are, we are explaining things hopefully in a clear way to everybody else. I wanted to be absolutely clear that I met Tom Bingham a lot of times. I can explain that. It wasn't because I was important. I wasn't important, but I was effectively the arm to a little old lady who refused to wear, use a Zimmer frame. So her family didn't want her going to parties. So she said, instead, Stephen will come and be my arm. And as a 21,
You will be
22-year-old
the Zimmer
man,
frame.
I was, and I did more than that. I hailed the cab. I put her in the cab. I told the cabbie how important she was. When she got home, she texted me and she texted them so that they all knew that she was home. So we put in place this is when mobile phones are only really starting. We put in place this system because the family were very, very protective, but she still wanted to enjoy life. And I'm very glad she did because she had another 11 years of a very happy life. My, yeah, and she left me a small amount of money when she died, and I used it all to commission a painting of her. So I have a painting of
Ah,
her at
glorious. Well, you have
home.
to show us next time the commission of the painting. Well, name her.
Anyway,
Name her.
sorry, this is all about Tom Bingham. So
Oh, no, but name the lady because people are interested in this stuff.
another law lord, which is what Tom Bingham was her husband, who was called Eustace Roskill. And so this is the Lady Elizabeth Roskill, who Eustace had unfortunately died before I met Elizabeth. So I never met Eustace, although Elizabeth always said that people in grief should talk about the dead person. And so I actually know everything about Eustace. Almost, I'm like, I know the endless Eustace tales. And I feel like I know him. I like him, but I
Oh
feel
no,
like I know him.
I always say people die three times. They die once when their soul leaves their body, the second time when you get put into the ground, and the third time when people stop talking about you.
Well, true, but that's so I keep memory of Eustace alive, and also because he was such a colourful character, I have all sorts of tales about Tom Denning as well.
Oh
I
no,
know all
we
sorts
come
of.
on to Denning, one of our favourites. Every law student's favourite is Denning.
Well, you say so the little things that I know about Tom Denning that most people probably don't know about Tom Denning is that he didn't like fuss. So for the state opening of Parliament, and he couldn't drive. I can't drive either, Andrew, and it's quite common amongst lawyers
Yes.
to not drive, but Tom Denning couldn't drive, so his wife drove. And for the state opening of Parliament, his wife would drive him to Parliament in their Morris Minor, their little car, and he would get out in all his regalia, and then they would do the thing, and then he would get back into the little Morris Minor, and that's how he'd get home. So
And what I loved about him, and you hear all these wonderful things where people talk about Denning, and I sat in court listening to him one time, and he's the most extraordinary man to listen to, isn't he?
Well, Elizabeth always used to say that he only put on that accent when he got to the House of Lords. So there was a bit of, and Eustace and Elizabeth were down in Hampshire too. So there's a little bit of, they were, but the other thing that I note about the two of them, which I should make more about, and I probably need to bang on about and make a constitutional point, is that both Eustace, well, actually all three of them. So Eustace, the law lord, Lord Roskill, Tom Denning, the law lord, Tom Denning, Lord
Yes.
Denning, and Elizabeth, the wife, all three sat as magistrates in Hampshire.
Ah.
Now, you wouldn't get that now, but why wouldn't you get that now? Why did they feel the need to sit as magistrates? Why did they do it? What? They felt honoured to sit as a magistrate. And Elizabeth rose to be chair of the bench in Basingstoke, I think it was. But they would sit as magistrates because they considered that their civic and moral and social duty to so to do. And they were honoured, just as they were honoured with their peerages, they were honoured by the letters JP. You know, and that's another factor. I'm not sure we always talk about all of this. But anyway, that's something I'll deal with later. The only other
Well,
one I'd
we'll absolutely unpack and people who could be a magistrate, who can't, and all that sort of stuff. We'll have a look at that as well. But
Yeah,
yes,
there's this
so your
rule against it.
relationship then with poor old Tom, why don't you like him?
Because he was incredibly boring at parties. Okay. Two red flags. First, he never brought his wife. Everybody else brought their wife, and they were lovely. Lord Nichols has a lovely wife, or had a lovely wife. I expect they may have passed now, but I don't know. It's many years ago. Everybody else brought their wives and whatnots and were lovely. And everybody else was decent and chatted to you. That's the first red flag. Second red flag was that he only ever talked about himself. So he would come up to you, say, "Hello, I'm Tom Bingham," to which I would usually say, "I know we've met many times,"
Right.
because it seriously irritated me that he literally never bothered to learn who I was. You know, it just never occurred to him that he continually saw this kid with Elizabeth, because he liked talking to Elizabeth, so he would come up to Elizabeth. And he would just immediately launch into a sort of a 45, 50-minute lecture about him and what he'd been up to. And it was interesting because they were doing all of the Blair constitutional reforms, and he was
Yes.
a major guiding power behind the Blair constitutional reforms. And I look forward to the day when I repeal all the Blair constitutional reforms. and when I say to people, I know exactly what's going on, because I knew exactly what was going on. He wasn't respected in the way Tom Denning was mutually respected, you know. So there was a sort of he's now come to be thought of as very respected.
Well,
He wasn't.
the book extraordinary, isn't it? The Rule of Law. What a great book to how did that come about?
I mean, I'm not saying people should burn it, Andrew,
Oh,
but they definitely shouldn't buy it. And the Rule of Law should not be a book size. That's the first, just glaring, you know, awooga, awooga. And the second thing is, it is in no way a scholarly or intellectual work. So nobody took it seriously. He didn't. By the time it came out, I think Lord Phillips was president of the Supreme Court. He's an incredibly charming, incredibly lovely man. Always made a good fuss of Elizabeth because she had, he'd been very, he's been poor as a church mouse in pupilage. So he was Eustace's pupil, and Eustace would send him out, "Go and get lunch." And he had no money. So little did Eustace know, he would actually go to Elizabeth in the flat, and Elizabeth would cook him a lunch, and then he'd
oh,
go
how
back.
glorious. I should just clarify for people that pupilage is rather like an apprenticeship. When you're a baby barrister, that's what you do. It's like your apprenticeship. You're called a pupil. You have to do two lots of 6 months, it is. The first lot is unpaid, or it certainly used to be in my day. And the second lot, you get little scraps of cases, which is quite fun. But that's called pupilage, which is, as I say, like an apprenticeship.
Yes, and they've changed it a little, but not for the better. But yes, because but he'd always just, I think he just adored Elizabeth for a very long time. She was a very, very lovely woman. I
So
mean,
how did that, I mean, we'll come on to Elizabeth, we'll unpack her in a special episode. She deserves it and get that portrait out. But tell me how the book came about. Why did he get to write it?
because he wanted to write it. So and because he's so eminent, he gets to write it. No, none of us read it. So there was a great feeling that we're not buying it, we're not reading it, we're not, you know, going along with this. It was sort of hoped it would quietly go away rather than have a massive barney with him and upset him, because he genuinely believes he's right and he's morally good. And I have problems with him because I don't despise him. I admire him as a contract lawyer, and I wish he'd spent his time in contract. And I wish he hadn't been seduced by the Labour Party, of which he was almost certainly a member of, if not a member, a massive fan. But all he was seduced into all this nonsense about human rights and international law, and we're going to build Star Trek, it's going to be great. You know, there'll never be another Hitler, la la la. And it's like, I don't want there to be another Hitler, mate, but I don't believe this nonsense. You know, it's just look. And he was a really, really, really top class contract lawyer. I mean, he's
Yes.
probably after Gunter Treitel, he's probably the second best. There's an argue for Reynolds as well, but he's very, very, very good.
Right.
Very,
Well,
very better than me at
let's look
contract
at,
law.
so that's the sort of background as to why he did. He's not much fun at parties, according to you. I'm sure others might have had a good time. Well, I don't know. We'll get them on just for the sake of balance. But going back to these principles, because they all make sort of sense when you look at them, or we should unpack them. Clarity and accessibility has got to be good.
Well, I agree
Law,
with that. That's
yes.
fine, but I just think it's a different constitutional principle. I don't think it's the rule of law.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it depends what the label is, but that's got to be good. Law, not discretion. Questions of legal right and liability should generally be resolved by application of the law, not by the exercise of discretion. We've spoken about that at length when we're talking about sentencing and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and that's Starmer. That's why Starmer is proving such an awful prime minister, because Starmer believes that second one. Say it again for the listeners and
So it's
viewers.
basically law, not discretion. So this is
Yeah.
what you sort of turn around. You say questions of legal right and liability should generally be resolved by application of the law, not by the exercise of discretion. It's what I often say is that every judge should come to the same decision with this formula when they're working on sentencing, for example.
And it's idealistic and it sounds really good. I'd like to prove you, tell you why it's wrong with an example from Germany. So went to Dusseldorf. I often get invited by German lawyers because they don't do cross-examination in their courts. But when they do something called international arbitration, they do cross-examination. So off we go to teach them cross-examination because we do all the time. And I'm in Dusseldorf because most German lawyers, German cities are great. They like to have them specialized. So Dusseldorf is the city for lawyers. And it's like, okay, that's nice. It's nice to have a city for lawyers. And I'm in Dusseldorf and there's a street, Andrew, and I can see miles in that direction because it's a straight road and I can see miles in that direction. And I'm a boy from Worcestershire. So I'm used to not crossing until there's no cars on the road. That's my default. But I'm telling you, Andrew, there were no cars on this road.
Right.
Absolutely none. And all of the Germans and me, because I was in Germany and I have to obey German law, there we stood at the crossing, waiting and waiting until the green man came and we were
Well
allowed to cross the road.
behaved.
And I just example that is this nonsense. That no, because sometimes you know what? No. And that's why I'm an equity lawyer. I've talked about that in a preceding episode. You know, sometimes just no. And I think that's a major mistake that Tom Bingham's made. I think Keir Starmer believes it because he's of this group. You know, they all know each other. He will have known Tom Bingham. And he will utterly believe that that is true. And a lot of the lawyers who are around now utterly believe that to be true. That's why when Lucy Letby refused to go into the box, they said she couldn't because there wasn't a specific law saying the judge could. But, you know, the rest of us are just like, you don't need a specific law for everything. They're actually
Yeah.
really bad lawyers, Andrew, because they're constantly
I
saying.
think this is what I loved about Tom Denning. He sort of almost made up the law, and he said, well, you've got to be sensible.
Well, exactly. I always say so the Indian legal system had a far better system of contract law because of the Indian Contract Act, which is in about the 1920s. It's somewhere around there. Might be the 1800s. It's around there. Indian Contract Act. Very good. And it brought in something that English law didn't have until we passed the Contracts Rights of Third Parties Act in 1998 or whatever it was. So for a long time, English law didn't have this principle until Tom Denning. Because Tom Denning actually invented it in the 60s and brought it in and said, because Tom Denning hadn't invented it, a little old lady would have suffered. And Tom Denning, like an equity lawyer, was
Well, he
just
was a
like,
little old man who liked little old ladies by the
well,
end,
there's no way
wasn't
he's going to let a little old lady suffer. And if I was a judge, there's no way I'd let a little old lady suffer. So, you know, there is just room for flexibility in law. The idea that we are automata, or the idea that we will be better run by machines.
Yes.
is so obviously
But
wrong.
this
It
is
shouldn't
interesting because
take
we
long
did
to
this
work
about the
out.
case about law, not discretion, and when we were talking about a whole life sentence as opposed to life plus a minimum term, and 9 days difference when Rutger Barnhart could have turned around and said, well, he's going to be 18 in 9 days. I think a bit of discretion there would have been appropriate. Let's deal with the next one. Equality before the law. The law should apply equally to all except where objective differences justify differentiation.
That's the only bit that is the rule of law. So the fact that the rules apply to everybody, that's rule of law. There you go. Good. Don't need a book now, do we, Tom? Finished.
Yes, justice is
Off we can
blind. That's
go.
the whole point, isn't it? It
Let's
doesn't
go
matter
down the pub,
color,
Tom.
creed, or anything else.
See, this is the problem. Tom Bingham did not go down the pub. He did not have the Spoons app on his phone.
Yes, interesting. Right, exercise of power. Then the exercise of power by the state should be based on authority that is legal, not arbitrary.
Just bonkers, don't even know what he means. Definitely not the rule of law.
Now, human rights. Now, this is the thing that's always brought up about everything, about you can't put people in the dock and gag them, reasonable force, the balance of that, deporting people who are illegal immigrants, sending them off to Rwanda or the Ascension Islands or anywhere else. Human rights, what he says, fundamental human rights should be observed by the state. What's your take?
That they've ruined law and that they're bad lawyers because a lot of the time that what they do is they go, this must happen except when it must not. It's just like, right, what the hell does that mean? What does that mean? What are you on about? And that's what that is. And what it really says is everything must compromise. It's the point I constantly make about Star Trek. It's Captain Picard, not Captain Kirk. It's if the aliens are firing at you, you must have a sensitive thought about why you've upset the aliens. Sit down with the aliens, have a cup of tea, and then negotiate a compromise rather than Captain Kirk, who would just blow the aliens up, which is, what most of us do. Of course, and everybody then piles on me and says, oh, you hate compromise. It's like, no, you should compromise most of the time, but you can't compromise with somebody like Axel Rudi-Cabana. You
Well,
can't
and Rutger
compromise.
Barnhart is a
Sometimes you
classic case
can't.
because Keir Starmer, he was asked very recently, the point that we discussed in an earlier episode of the widely acclaimed pair of briefs. We raised the whole thing about a whole life sentence as opposed to life plus a minimum term. And he was asked about this, and his defense was, no, I'm not going to change it. I'm not in favor of that because it would be against human rights. We've got to protect the children.
It was even worse. He said the UN requires it. And it's just like, I don't know who you think they are, mate, but we run this country. It's signs that the bollard was going to end up being a bollard. For me, all goes back to that time. Do you remember he was asked if a relative of yours was desperately ill, would you pay for them to go private? To which absolutely everybody in the country would have said, yes, if as long as I had the money, of course I would. I'd do anything to keep my relative alive. I love them. And the bollard said no. No, because I would follow the rules, and the rules is that we use the NHS, so we would not do that. It's just like, you bollard.
Yeah,
Sorry.
interesting stuff. Right, next rule of law, dispute resolution means must be provided for resolving disputes without undue cost or delay. That sounds good in principle, doesn't it?
It's just got nothing to do with the rule of law. What has that got to do with the rule of law? You may as well just say courtrooms should have bright furnishings. It's got nothing to do with the rule of law. This is what it morphed into, and it's why we had this experience when the book came out. There were no parties for it, and nobody, as I said, nobody bought it, nobody read it, and it was just sort of treated as mildly embarrassing. And we mustn't sort of, we'll just look at the floor and hope it goes away, because it morphed into Everything About the World as I Want It by Tom Bingham, and that's just like. Okay, and the thing is, Andrew, I can't even criticize his motives because his motives are great. It's just he doesn't understand humans. He probably never met them. He and the bollard would get on,
Well, I always quote the case about litigation. It was that brilliant cartoon by Jay Bright with the cow with the word litigation written on it, and the plaintiff pulling the horns and the defendant pulling the tail, and there's the lawyer milking it. That's what he's talking about when you're saying there mustn't be undue cost or delay, isn't it?
Yes, but every change he's brought in and every change brought in since him has increased legal cost, not reduced it. Just so everyone knows.
Yeah.
Because I there were drinks parties for the oh, who's the oh, what's his name? Lord Justice Jackson, when he did his review that was going to lower, they were going to reduce legal costs, Andrew. They have, of course, increased legal costs. Every time a judge comes along promising to reduce legal costs, they have increased them. Because you know what? Communism doesn't work.
Yeah, it is interesting. And also, I mean, this is what people say about defamation. They said, well, hang about, your reputation is more valuable than gold or silver, as they say in the Bible. But people's ability to enforce the protection of their name, it is absolutely prohibitive when you look at the legal costs, which sometimes can run into millions, as we've seen with like things like Wagatha Christie and so on and so forth, those wonderful cases. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's illegal costs need to be reduced. Access to justice must be increased. I have policy plans to do that, and I submit them to people. I believe mine will work because fundamentally, what you can't do is just declare that costs must come down, increase bureaucracy, and then imagine that costs will come down because they won't. what you must do is understand the market, that it's about supply and demand, and therefore you must simply increase supply. That's it. If you want to reduce costs, you increase supply. That's true of anything, absolutely anything. one of the things I most like in life, there are lots of like rich people foods that I didn't eat as a child because I was poor, and then I come along and I eat them, and I'm like, oh God, this is awful. Why the hell did they eat this? Like oysters in particular, it's just awful. Why are they eating that? But the one rich people food that I really do like is caviar. I have
Yes.
an utter weakness for it. And therefore, what I would really, really, really like is if everybody else in the world hated caviar. So if we woke up tomorrow and, I mean, maybe enough to keep there, that somebody's still actually going to fish it out the sea. I don't want it so hated that nobody even fishes out anymore. But I could really tank the price of caviar if nobody would eat it. And if nobody in Chelsea would put it on their hair, that would really help as well. Really, because, and it got out of, because I used to do Christmas caviar every year.
Yes.
And then it got, in the mid-noughties, it got really ridiculous. It was like it quadrupled in price one year. And I just went, I can't justify this. I really, you know, I fundamentally, I've got thrift in me. I don't mind splashing out
And
some
have you ever
nice
put caviar on your hair?
No. Never. And look, I've got
Glorious.
luscious hair without the need to stack any
Right,
caviar on.
glorious. Well, but the law, to be fair, and we've often made this point, the
Yes.
law tries to encourage, they don't really want people to come to court, they want to try to encourage them to settle.
The problem with Tom Bingham is that I can summarize the rule of law in, you know, 20 seconds, and so should or could he. It is the rules, posit known in advance, clear rules known in advance, applied equally to everybody and enforced without fear or favour.
There you go. That sounds right. He's got a
Bang.
couple more, though. Let's look at those,
Oh.
which no, he keeps going. You have to work on that wonderful
I know he did
fair
in person.
trial. A fair trial. The adjudicative procedures provided by the state should be fair.
The right to a fair trial is just different from the rule of law. It's just not part of it. You can have the rule of law without the right to a fair trial. What he's wrestling with, and what these people like the Bollard, to his credit, is they really, really hate the fact that Nazi Germany had a legal system. Okay, they can't deal with that. They can't deal with the fact that Hitler acted legally. So Hitler did really monstrous evil, as we all know, but he did it legally. They're so desperate to see themselves and lawyers as moral creatures that they just can't deal with it. So they have to effectively lie, because I'm afraid he did act lawfully. Sorry. And law was no defense against somebody like Hitler, just as it isn't in other constitutions, which have a there are places on the planet right now who have a dictator right now who have a constitution that say they shouldn't. And Tom Bingham and the Bollard want to believe that constitutions and legal documents will stop a dictator, and they don't.
I do like the idea of Tom Bingham and the Bollard. I think that should be a pop group.
Yes, well, I liked it. So they have the best of motivations. They're just simply delusional. And the reason I get so scathing on all of this, Andrew, is because when I was in the 90s, I was inclined to believe all this. I was actually, although, I mean, I noticed people were sort of looking at the floor and shuffling and therefore not praising this. I was probably the most enthusiastic in favor of all of this. And the most, I used to read, there's a professor called Ronald Dworkin in the
Yes.
States who made an awful lot of money basically selling this idea. And he would write that judges are Hercules. Judges judges are Superman. Judges are heroes. Judges, and I used to sit there going, oh, wow, judges are so cool. I love the judges. They're amazing. And then I met the judges and I'm like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I reckon Mr. Justice Goose would be good in a fight,
Oh,
but
yes, yes, absolutely. What's fit for the goose is fit for the gander.
but the
He's
vast majority of
superb.
them, well, he is, but the vast majority of them wouldn't say boo to a goose.
Ah,
And
yes.
they
Well,
are
the
little
poor
old
guy, he
ladies
must
and
have
little old
grown
men.
up with all of this. This is the reason I reckon he's so tough, actually, is if you give somebody a name like Goose, albeit he took your parents, it does make you a bit tougher, doesn't it?
Well, that's the whole premise behind The Boy Named Sue.
Yep, no, absolutely.
That's exactly what I did.
And John Wayne.
Yep. I mean,
Shirley,
that
that was
maybe.
his name, wasn't it? John Wayne.
Yeah, and I don't. Nobody wants a tyrant or a dictator less than me. I just don't believe any of this will stop a dictator. What it's much more likely to do is gum up civil society so that there are obvious. What you'll get, Andrew, and of course it could never happen here, but you'll get something which is so obviously stupid it shouldn't be happening.
Yes.
Like, oh, I don't know, small boats arriving on the coast every day.
Ah.
It's just hypothetical. And the public will eventually become so angry that successive governments, because they're all tied up in all this goo, all these lies,
Yes.
all these ropes. This is why Starmer can't do anything. Because he genuinely believes the UN means I can't act like a sensible person. Well, if governments don't act like sensible people, then what happened in Weimar Germany was they went, our governments are clearly mad and they're not refusing to act like sensible people. How bad can the little shouty man be? And
Yes.
that's basically what they did. The things were so bad, they just went, well, can he be worse? And he was. So let's all remember that he was. Let's never go with the angry little shouty man. But let's return to sensible democracy where none of us are constant fear of Hitler will cause Hitler. Let's just all accept he doesn't live here. The air of this country is a special magical place. God protects these islands. We're okay. Calm down, calm down, calm down. Now let's deal with the problems in a sensible way. We are all compassionate. We're all nice people. But let's sort the problems out.
Yeah,
That would fix the
interesting. Well,
problem.
the final rule that he has,
Yes
which
or
is
no?
perhaps the one you and I have spoken about a lot. We talk about migrants, we talk about non-refoulement, we talk about human rights, and so
This
on
is
and
where I
so forth.
explode, isn't it? Like, this is the one
Absolutely,
where I
you're going to love this
explode.
one because it's compliance with international law, and the state must comply with its obligations under international law as well as national law. That's what Tom Bingham says. What's your take on that?
Demotic Anglo-Saxon words. That's all I have, Andrew, is demotic Anglo-Saxon words, which for viewers, perhaps in foreign places who don't understand what that means I'm swearing and being extremely rude because it is not only wrong, it is tyranny. It is giving away control of our country to God knows who. And it is who, and Tom would have done that because they'll all be my friends. And all my friends are trustworthy. Well, do you know what? That's a stupid idea. You don't know who's going to end up in control of these organizations at all. You cannot predict at all. Iran chaired the UN Human Rights Commission. Okay, let's get a grip, people. There's nothing wrong with common sense. It's protected these islands for a long time. Common sense, not Tom Bingham's theories, will protect these islands. Tom Bingham was a loon. That one is the one that really. But I mean, it's just disgraceful. Sorry, forgive me, Andrew. I can't actually deal with that one. I get so angry. But I've been fighting that one since about 2015. I mean, I'm just so angry at that one. And it's not true. And a warlord should not write things in books which are not true, but which he wants to be true.
Oh, it's often brought out, including by the wonderful David Starkey. He often refers to Tom Bingham. Would your response, is it fair to say, be the response given famously in Arkell versus Prestram?
So, I had to look this up when you referenced it because I'm just not that old.
I'd love to give you. Well, let me tell you what it is. It refers to an informal legal exchange rather than an actual court case, and it's centered around a libel case involving Private Eye, which is published by Prestram. And what happened? It published an article, including accusing James Arkell, who was a retail credit manager at Granada TV Rental Limited, of accepting illicit claimants. And his solicitors, Arkell's solicitors, Goodman Derrick, wonderful firm, wrote to Private Eye demanding a retraction and stating that his attitude, Arkell's attitude to damages, would be determined by the nature of the magazine's reply. And what reply what Private Eye did, they sent a now famous reply. We acknowledge the receipt of your letter of the 29th of April, referring to Mr. J. Arkell. We note that Mr. Arkell's attitude to damages will be governed by the nature of our reply, and would therefore be grateful if you inform us as to what his attitude to damages would be were he to learn the nature of our reply is as follows: F off.
Well, I certainly, I mean, I don't actually swear, I just say demotic Anglo-Saxon. But that's funny that Goodman Derrick. So Goodman Derrick was an old infirm, which is a phrase we have because it obviously infirm is quite, you know, it just means ill as well. So it's a pun word. But it
Yes.
means a solicitor's firm that is in an inn of court. And this Goodman Derrick in particular used to be in Lincoln's Inn. And I know a story about Goodman Derrick, which is that the founder, Mr. Goodman, or Mr. Derrick. One of them was the solicitor, which is perfectly normal, and that's absolutely normal. The other one was the clerk. And they were, I was told they were such close friends that the clerk went on the name of the law firm. And I'm like, yeah, I'm bisexual, mate. Buy me another one. I know exactly what that means. So I always think quite sweet things every time I hear Goodman Derrick's name. Now I might be defaming them and they're dead and they might be offended if that the suggestion. I hope nobody's offended at the suggestion of, you know, same-sex love anymore. But I've always taken the view that that was probably a love thing, and therefore think quite sweetly things about Goodman Derrick. I think they're quite as sweet. That just makes you inherently sweet in my eyes. But yes, I have nothing but demotic Anglo-Saxon for Tom. The last one is the worst one. If you believe it, then you're a nutter, and you have ceded control of your country to randoms in the international stage who you don't know and almost certainly cannot trust. I mean, we had a clear wrongen in charge of the International Court of Justice. He's just gone off to be president of Lebanon, so that'll be fun. And he obviously wasn't campaigning or using threats against Israel in order to get look popular in his home state of Lebanon. He clearly wasn't abusing his legal powers for political personal gain. Anyway, fortunately, his replacement is probably the only honest ICJ judge, so actually, for a brief period of time, they might get slightly better, and then we don't know who will be followed by. One of the reasons Barrett doesn't like dictators is not that they're an inherently good system. The Emperor Augustus and the Emperor Hadrian were ace. Okay, they were really good emperors. But you can't guarantee whether you're going to get a good one. You don't know when you're going to get another good one, and if you've got a bad one, you're probably going to die. So, you know, maybe don't have one. And you can see it in the bollard. He'd love to have us all executed if he could. Absolutely love
Well,
it.
yeah,
I
fantastic,
mean,
isn't
nobody would end up on the chopping block more than me. So no, you stick with democracy, not Tom Bingham.
Fantastic. Well, there you go. Bingham and the Bollard. Look out for the new album release coming very, very soon. In the meantime, it's been a joy, as always, Stephen Barron. Thank you very much for joining me here. And if you have any questions, suggestions for either Stephen and myself, polite suggestions on a postcard, do contact us. Don't forget, you can subscribe. Stephen's on Substack and lots of platforms as well. Click that subscribe button here for Octopus TV, Andrew Eborn, The Andrew Eborn Show on more platforms than Paddington. We have fantastic guests. Errol Musk, Elon's father, is on the show all of the time, and we unpack the stories about him. I always say that if you don't read the newspaper, well, you're ill-informed. If you do read it, you're misinformed. Well, we unpack the stories about Elon every single day, about his glorious companies. I had the joy last time, Stephen, I think you might have seen this. We unpacked the wonderful inauguration of Trump. I was watching it, doing a live broadcast of that with Errol Musk, Elon's father, and whoop when they talked and cut to Elon going, saying we're going to Mars and all that sort of stuff. Glorious stuff. Do get in touch. It's a real pleasure. But for now, Stephen Barrett, thank you for joining me.
Bye.